dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. We are wandering about the battle space of the war for the free world, a little less well-equipped to wage it today because a dear friend and colleague and comrade in that great war, Andrew Breitbart, has passed away. I'll be speaking with Andrew McCarthy about it at the bottom of the show. I would simply say at the moment, because I'm intruding on the time of my first guest, and I don't want to do that, how deeply, deeply I express my condolences, and I think of that of all freedom-loving people. Certainly people who care about freedom and security, as we do here on this program and at bigpeace.com, Andrew Breitbart's fabulous website for this space, that we really mourn his loss and send those condolences to his family. And Claudia Rosette is our guest in this segment, and I don't want to miss the opportunity to have you say a word about Andrew as well, Claudia. I know you knew him and admired him, I'm sure, as much as I did. Any thoughts you wish to share on this subject?
Yes. Well, first, it's a terrible loss and very jarring and quite sudden. You know, I did not know that. And I was waiting with great interest to hear more of the revelations he promised after he dined a few weeks ago in early February with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. Mm. Yeah, there was this extraordinary scene where Tucker Carlson of the Daily Caller paid $2,500 at a charity auction, the thing he purchased being a dinner served by Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, where he invited Andrew Breitbart, and they went to Chicago and were served a dinner handmade for them by Ayers and Dorn. And he came out of this saying Ayers is a sociopath but a great chef, and talked about the videos he had and the things he would further be disclosing on Ayers and Dorn and their relationship with President Obama. I was waiting with enormous interest to see what he was going to produce, since things like the tape that the Los Angeles Times claimed to have and wrote a story about during the last presidential campaign,
but never released,
yeah, exactly, was a farewell dinner for Rashid Khalidi, you know, descendant of outraged Palestinians going back to the 8th century or something,
yes,
where Obama was present and great merrymaking went on, and all these, it sounded as if there might be interesting things to learn given the narrative that had been put out that President Obama in his earlier days barely knew, or at any point barely knew Ayers and Dorn, wasn't that close to Khalidi, et cetera.
I've had a sneaking suspicion since the LA Times, and this is such a fantastically interesting story, Claudia, as of course you know, as one of the country's preeminent investigative journalists and essayists and editors. I can't think of another episode like this where a major national publication had its hands on something that was so clearly of direct relevance to the public's need to know about a presidential candidate, and an organization that is all about, you know, the public's need to know, right, every day, withholding that information.
Precisely.
Very
and
peculiar.
And it's on a topic of immense importance,
yes,
danger, volatility.
Yes.
This is specifically, you know, speaks to, among other things, not only President Obama's earlier connections with the radical, you know, the self-described terrorist left, you know,
yeah,
but also
convicted,
with,
I think, in this case, not just,
yeah,
self-described,
exactly,
convicted felons,
right,
murderers.
Exactly. With people have already died in this saga, and
yes,
the years ago, and, you know, there was so much that seemed very important. The LA Times has never released it. And when Andrew Breitbart said, this was early February, just last month, that he had further things he was going to disclose, again, I was waiting with enormous interest. I hope his colleagues will, in their course of honoring him, will put out the stories that he clearly had in the work.
Claudia, let me switch gears here. We have a situation, as they say, the North Koreans, a country that you have covered for many years, including inside North Korea, where you, I believe, broke a major story, as is your wont, about the North Korean gulag.
No, Frank, that was actually in Russia. I've written about the North Korean gulag. The logging camps I went into were in the Russian Far East.
Okay.
North Korea has a bigger net than is often explained.
It does, but also an impenetrable one, so I do want to get that clear. But you have written about the prison state that it really is. We're being told that it's now ready to, stop its enriching of the uranium and its testing of long-range missiles in exchange for all kinds of goodies that presumably the Obama administration will be happy to send its way. Is it likely to result in anything different than have these gambits in the past?
No. Welcome back to the age of nuclear extortion, chapter 47C.
Yeah.
this is a so-called moratorium. there's not even a deal here to actually abandon the program. It's just they're going to stop for a while, and they can, as they have done in the past, point to any imagined provocation, anything at all. North Korea is a country where there is zero accountability of the government to its own people. So they can stay in anything they want to and just walk away. And the administration may be under the impression that it is buying time as long as it tries to stop North Korea, hit pause on the North Korean nuclear program. The trouble is, first of all, there's no way that the IAEA can confirm and verify everything going on in North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to get? We've been down this road before.
Right.
Second, there's no sign that North Korea has abandoned a whole range of other scams and activities that have been going on for years that are part of its proliferation program linked to the Middle East. It's got networks that reach into places like Latin America. It's been particularly busy in the Middle East with missile development, and of course that nuclear reactor it was busy building with Syria. Those connections are still there. I haven't seen any blinding news that it has abandoned its narcotics rackets, its counterfeiting of U.S. currency, and so forth. And finally, Frank, there's no sign that
nuclear proliferation and on and on.
Exactly. And as far as the horrendous violations of human rights inside North Korea, again, where's the sign that anything has actually changed? They have not opened up the gulag. They have not allowed free speech. If you're not seeing North Koreans rising up as people have been doing in Arab countries in the Middle East, actually also in Iran, they tried to do it in Iran, in the Middle East,
that's right.
It's because this is a much more crushing, brutal government. They don't get that far.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are doing another deal. I'm reading that another North Korean nuclear negotiator will be arriving for a conference in America. They collect fees from the United States for all of this. Mm-hmm. It's extortion, right?
Yeah, it is extortion. And the thing that is so galling about it, Claudia, I think you would agree, is not only have we bought this pony again and again and again, only to have it turn out to be mostly manure and no pony, but we wind up perpetuating this regime. We keep it a going concern with these, subsidies of one kind or another, the food allocations, and other concessions. It's just staggeringly short-sighted and immoral, given what we know about the regime.
When Kim Jong-il's father died in 1994, the U.S. stepped in and provided the deal and the subsidies that helped shore up his regime. And we then had we then had many more years of horror. Actually, it got even worse than it had been. More, something like a million or more people starved to death. And now we're doing just the same
thing. We're doing it again. And Claudia, we have to leave it at this, I'm afraid. But it's so painful because what's been happening to the people of Korea is bad enough. What's been happening to others around the world who have been repressed or threatened as a result of what the Koreans have been exporting is a whole nother blight on the civilized world. So, Claudia, thank you for joining us. God bless you for the great work you do now in residence at the Foundation for Defense of Democracy. A marvelous journalist and great friend. And thank you for not least a wonderful contribution you made to the program we did in New York earlier this week at the Center for Security Policy. We look forward to seeing you again very soon. Next up, we've got Avi Yoresh is going to be joining us to talk about financial weapons we might bring to bear against this Iranian bomb. Straight ahead. We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying we're serious about really cutting the budget.
As a backdrop
to this debate about 2011, people make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by a man I have come to regard as a guru of sorts on matters involving the financial piece of terrorism. Specifically, how do our enemies use various financial mechanisms to underwrite the threat they pose to us, and what can we do about it? He's not only thought seriously about this from the glorious heights of the ivory towers of think tankery, including now at the Washington Institute for Middle East, most immediately as the adjunct scholar at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, but also as a practitioner. He was a policy advisor at the Treasury Department's Office of Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, in which capacity he served as a liaison to the Department of Homeland Security. and to the Defense Department as a consultant. He's also the author of Iran's Dirty Banking, How the Islamic Republic Skirts International Financial Sanctions, and that's where we want to go. Avi Joris is our guest. Welcome back. Avi, tell us, you've written a piece about an important facility, I guess, in this financial war on terror, SWIFT. Tell us what that is, and what has it been doing lately that it may be of help in this fight against the Iranian bomb?
First, let me start by saying it's always a pleasure to be back on your show, Frank. It really is. It's always nice to speak to you.
Thank you.
SWIFT stands for the Society for Worldwide Internet Interbank Financial Telecommunications. They're essentially the lubricant upon which the entire global financial system rests. Banks communicate back and forth with one another, you know, debit or credit this particular account, and they send messages back and forth. SWIFT is the repository for these debits and credits. It basically says to one bank, credit this account and debit that account. SWIFT is based in Belgium and has offices all over the world, including a very large presence in New York. And recently, a whole host of bodies have put tremendous pressure on SWIFT to cut off Iranian financial institutions from being able to play. In other words, if you're able to cut off their ability to send messages, in other words, to debit or credit their business partners, they really would not have the ability to move money. Mm-hmm. And so SWIFT is really one of the linchpins to cutting off Iran from the international financial sector.
It sounds like something that should have been done a long time ago, but it hasn't. So is it happening now?
Slowly but surely, SWIFT is making slow moves. They're now saying they only want to cut off a few Iranian banks, those that have been blacklisted by the European Union, as opposed to all the banks that have been blacklisted by the United States. Just to take a quick step back, the United Nations has blacklisted 4 Iranian banks. The European Union has designated about 11 or 12, about a dozen or so. And the United States has blacklisted 20 out of 30 for proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and terrorism, and has instructed all U.S. financial institutions that all of Iranian banks, all 30 of them, are involved in money laundering and criminal activity. So according to SWIFT's own bylaws, they should have cut off all of Iran's banks, and they haven't done so. They essentially want to have their cake and eat it too at this point. They want to be able to service Iranian banks, not the most egregious ones, but they still want to service about a dozen and a half banks in order to ensure that money comes in and out of Iran. They don't want to lose business. It's a business decision on their part.
Yeah. Avi Joris is our guest. And Avi, I've learned from you, among others, that one of the inherent characteristics of your line of work is the proposition that money is fungible. So presumably any of these banks that are in business in Iran that have access to SWIFT or otherwise not on the blacklists can presumably be used by the regime for the same purposes as those that have been identified and sanctioned, could they not?
That's exactly right. So the way it would work is as follows. Unless all the Iranian banks are cut off, those that aren't would essentially have business relationships with those that are blacklisted. And so they would essentially have to have one more hop. In other words, they'd have to move money through another financial institution, but they'd essentially have free access to the international financial sector, which for those of us who follow this issue closely, it's unacceptable. Iran has been blacklisted. All their financial institutions have been blacklisted for money laundering. 2/3 of them directly involved in proliferating weapons of mass destruction and terrorism. And therefore, you got to cut off all of their financial institutions. And the way to do that is to work it through SWIFT.
It sounds sensible. What do we need to do?
There are other mechanisms they could use. Well, there's a few ways we could do it. One, there's congressional pressure. Two, the administration at this point is very, very reluctant to put pressure on SWIFT because they're afraid that if you do so, oil prices will spike. And so the counter argument to what I'm telling you is if you do cut off the Iranian banking sector, well, oil prices will go sky high. And my response to that is generally you have to choose between bad and worse. We have to choose between paying more money at the pump and letting Iran get a nuclear bomb. And at this point, we're 10 minutes to midnight. And so I'm not advocating sanctions against Iran. I'm advocating full economic warfare, identifying all the weak nodes in their financial sector and going after them very methodically.
From oil and gas,
banking, etc.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, Avi Joris, and you've literally written the book on how you can go about trying to bring that kind of economic warfare skill set to bear. It's entitled, again, folks, Iran's Dirty Banking, How the Islamic Republic Skirts International Financial Sanctions. Avi, at the very moment that you're talking about intensifying these sanctions. We've been getting reports that Huawei, a company owned by the Chinese military, as at least associated with it, is now making noises about very directly breaking the sanctions regime. What's your thoughts on that, and what could we do to punish them for doing so?
Sure. Well, that particular company has essentially, it's one of the biggest telecommunications companies in the world. And what they've done in the last few years is provide the Islamic Republic of Iran with the specific instruments to track and kill those in the opposition. So in other words, they're using cell phone technology in order to geospatially locate those in the opposition. And at this point, Congress really started to make noise about how to cut them off from the U.S. market if they don't choose to back out of the Iranian market. In December, this company officially recognized that and stated that they would slowly back out of the Iranian market. They would continue to service existing contracts, but they would not service new ones. Huawei has a huge presence in the United States, and so they know that if they're cut off from the U.S. market, there's a very heavy price to pay. At this point, I think we have to send a message to all companies that are involved in illicit activity when it comes to Iran. Choose our market or their market. And that comes to the oil industry, the telecommunications industry, the shipping industry. Those are involved, the companies that are involved in lithium, uranium, all of the weak nodes when it comes to Iran's financial sector. We have to do a better job at identifying and then enforcing on the back end and making sure that those companies have to choose between our market and their market. It's very simple. Name and shame.
Avi Yorosh is our guest, and I'm always intrigued in talking with you, Avi, about the myriad ideas that you have that might help. And I'm struck by the fact that many of them seem not to have been adopted before now. You mentioned a moment ago that we are 10 minutes before midnight. I fear we're much closer than that. And the question, I guess, is, do we have time, in your estimation, to try to bring to bear the sorts of techniques that you're talking about that are in your sweet spot of economic warfare, as you call it? Or is it really now to the point where even if people would take your advice and begin acting on them, your recommendations, that it's too late?
So, Frank, I lost my ability to prognosticate a long time ago.
We're in the business of prognosticating.
If I look over the horizon, I don't really know how much time Iran has. If you listen to the administration, we have 18
forever.
Months. If you listen to the Israelis, you have shorter. My position is as follows: until military action is taken, we on the outside have an obligation to do whatever is possible in order to slow down their march towards nuclearization. The most effective way of doing that is economic warfare. And so I don't have the ability to influence military action one way or the other, nor would I want to. What I do know how to do is, and what all of us know how to do, is wage economic warfare. Leave the decision of the military strike or non-strike to those in the administration, both here and in Israel, and the rest of us can really rally around one thing here and in Europe, frankly. We can all rally around economic sanctions, economic warfare. If we want to prevent a war from taking place, this is one of the most effective ways of making that happen.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question about it, Avi, and I pray that your counsel will be heeded by our own government and others with respect to SWIFT and in these other areas that you've delineated, including in your superb book. And I think it's one of these things that's required reading. Again, folks, Iran's Dirty Banking, How the Islamic Republic Skirts International Financial Sanctions. Avi Yorosh, Red Cell Intelligence Group, and also with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Thanks for spending some time with us, and keep up this important work, and keep coming back to us if you would have an update on how we're doing in this space.
Thanks, Frank, and looking forward to being back on your show.
Well,
absolutely.
We'll do it soon. Next up, we will be speaking with the fabulous Corey Shockey, beautiful and brilliant. What's going on at the moment in Iran, Afghanistan, and Syria? Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. North Korea has announced that it will stop enriching uranium and conducting long-range missile tests. In exchange, the United States is set to provide vast quantities of food aid. The idea behind so generously rewarding these sorts of easily reversed North Korean gestures is to get the new government of Kim Jong-un back to the six-party negotiations his father broke off before he died last year. Predictably, that will mean still more Western aid to Pyongyang as a reward for still more of its empty promises. Far from making North Korea less of a threat, the life support extended in this fashion will perpetuate one of the planet's most repressive and dangerous dictatorships, extend the torment of its enslaved people, and enable the North's own continuing military buildup and that of its allies. Enough already. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at SecureFreedomRadio.com.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Carrie Shackey. I'm sorry, say that again. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back. We're joined by Corey Shockey. She is a woman who has accomplished great things despite her extraordinary youth. She has been in the Defense Department, the National Security Council, the State Department at quite exalted levels. She is now a research fellow at the Hoover Institution and an associate professor of international security studies at West Point. A woman who it is always a pleasure to have aboard and to visit with about a world that's getting more and more complicated by the day. And Corey, you've been writing about pieces of it that I thought it would be particularly interesting to talk about now, one of which is this peculiar circumstance in which the International Atomic Energy Agency seems to be more robust, more, well, clear-headed than the U.S. intelligence agencies about the threat that is emerging in terms of nuclear capabilities from Iran. What on earth is going on here?
I'm so glad you asked that, Frank, because this really worries me. The blithe confidence with which James Clapper, the Director for National Intelligence, testified last week that the Iranians have not yet decided to develop a nuclear program. And the inconsistency between that statement and the behavior we observe of Iran, refusing to allow the IAEA access to the Parchin site, which the IAEA worries is a military facility, mm-hmm. the concern about missing enriched uranium, the refusal of the Iranian government to permit the IAEA to speak with scientists working on the program, and the fact that Iran continues to enrich not just at the 3.5% level, but now they're over the 20% threshold.
Right.
There is no use for that uranium other than weapons.
And,
so,
of course, Shaki, it is also worth noting for those of us who are not as proficient about these things as you are that once you're at the 20% enrichment level, you are well on your way to having bomb-grade uranium. And I guess just to come back to the threshold question here is the IAEA was noteworthy for most of the past decade under, to be sure, its previous management, Mohammed El-Baradei, for being lousy on understanding this threat. How is it that they seem to be perceiving in what, let's be honest, is a reality that you can't get around, which is, how do we know whether they've decided
right.
or not? And if they do decide, will we know that they've decided under these circumstances?
I think that's exactly the way to phrase the dilemma, Frank, because I'm not confident I know what the Iranians are doing. The blithe confidence that James Clapper expresses that he knows makes me quite nervous, and it smacks of a policy decision not to undertake the consequences of acknowledging what Iran is doing.
Right.
Whereas, the IAEA has gotten a lot better. That side of the equation has changed. I also think the other side of the equation has changed, and that the political leadership in the intelligence community, and maybe actually more
our intelligence community.
Our intelligence
yeah.
community. And maybe more frighteningly, it's broader than the leadership, that they are still so singed from having been wrong mm-hmm. on the false positive about the Iraqi program that they are now choosing to be wrong on the false negative side and denying
well
the progress that the Iranians are making.
Well put, yeah. And setting us up for a situation in which everybody's going to be slapping their heads in the not-too-distant future saying, oh, my gosh, they did decide. and here it
yeah.
is. It's an accomplished fact. Let me switch gears quickly with you, Corey Shaki, because there's, as I said, so much to talk about. You've also written recently about a bit of good news out of Afghanistan, and I'm anxious for some because it seems to me there's a lot of not so happy things happening there at the moment. Tell us what
yeah.
the good news is, and if you would put it into the context of what else is happening, specifically this green on blue business in which we've had, I think just today, another two Americans killed by supposed friends.
That's right. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda have rightly identified the fundamental weakness in our strategy in Afghanistan, which is it relies wholly on trust and confidence between us and the Afghan security forces for us to train and arm them to take over the responsibilities we are currently carrying out. And over the course of last year, you have seen increased pressure by the Taliban and Al-Qaeda to put infiltrators into the Iraqi security services, which are now 350,000 Afghans we have recruited and trained them for the army and the police. There have been 45 attacks over the course of the last year or so. The American military did what the American military so earnestly does, which is identify ways we can improve.
Yeah. As if that were the problem.
The good news, though, is that the Afghan military, their army chief in particular, took a very serious look at this and found a crucial vulnerability that they have, which is that the vast majority of these attacks that have occurred, Afghans attacking American and coalition forces, in the majority of those cases, those people's families are living in Pakistan, not in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And they are now forcing Afghan soldiers to either move their families into Afghanistan, which to still do something about those people's commitment to the country of Afghanistan, mm-hmm. or to leave the service. Hmm. And so
and just to make it clear for the rest of us, Corey, why is this so important? Is it that the people who have their families elsewhere might be susceptible to having them under pressure from the Taliban or their Pakistani allies, or is it that they're not actually committed to the cause?
I think it's both those things, Frank.
Interesting.
And that the Afghan military even undertook this tells you that they are no longer passive actors in a strategy we are executing, but they're taking responsibility for fixing the problems.
Yeah.
That's quite a rare thing in the political psychology of Afghan government institutions and Afghan society writ large. What
Corey,
I want to, if I may just interrupt. Is changing them.
I'm sorry. Let me interrupt just quickly to say I'm anxious to hear your thoughts on Syria, too, and we will run out of time momentarily. Mm-hmm. But just a further question about this psychology, because I wonder whether I was talking about it with Jim Hansen on the show yesterday. I wonder whether what we're up against here may, in part at least, be that people are calculating we're going to be leaving and the Taliban is going to be coming back, and they better be, you know, demonstrating that they want to get right with the Taliban, I think is how Jim put
yes.
it. And so it's not just the families and that sort of thing. It's just a survival instinct that's kicking in. Could that be happening too?
You're exactly right, Frank. And this is the tragic consequence of the president's bad policy choice to announce an end date that's disconnected from the objectives we're trying to achieve.
Right. And negotiating with the Taliban and rewarding them with releasing detainees and so on. Corey, just quickly, 2 minutes. You were a former deputy director of policy planning in the State Department. That's your most recent, I think, exalted position. What would you be telling the Secretary of State at the moment, and more to the point, what should we be thinking about with respect to what's going on in Syria?
There is no regime, the overthrow of which would more advance America's interests than the overthrow of the Assad regime in Syria. And Syrians,
irrespective of what comes next?
Well, what comes next could be quite bad. Mm. There's no doubt about that. But what is happening now is quite bad. And by allowing kind of gravity to pull this country apart along sectarian lines and to pull in outside elements that don't have Syria's well-being in their agenda, is actually, that's a recipe for making it worse already.
Mm-hmm. Corey, point taken. Can be better. Specifically, how would you advise people to try to make sure that it doesn't go that way, whether it's Al-Qaeda or whether it's Muslim Brotherhood or somebody else who fills the vacuum here? What could we be doing? And I need you to tell me this in 30 seconds.
The first thing is get to know who is taking up arms against the government.
Mm-hmm.
Get your arms around them. Try and influence their agenda. Try and get them to commit to a governance policy for Syria that will actually be good for Syria. This is predominantly a political challenge, not a military challenge, and that's where we're failing worst.
Got it. Okay. Corey Shockey, thank you so much for not failing to get that message across as briefly as you did. Thank you for joining us, and so many interesting thoughts. I hope you'll come back again very soon. We look forward to talking with you.
It's always a pleasure talking with you, Frank.
Next up, we'll be visiting with Andy McCarthy, first and foremost, about the loss of Andrew Breitbart today. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Meta System. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and
listen. I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need, and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined once again by our friend Andy McCarthy, a man I have had the privilege of seeing a bit of this week, which is a special treat. He participated in a wonderful program we did in New York City and, as always, contributed marvelously to it, and we'll talk a bit about that in a moment. But, Andy, I wanted first to, reminisce a little bit and, I guess, grieve, really, with you for a friend of both of ours, Andrew Breitbart, who passed away earlier today. A shocking thing to have a 43-year-old with so much life and so much promise taken from us. What are your thoughts, sir?
Frank, I'm just stunned near to the point of speechlessness over Andrew. He was He was a tremendous life force, full of energy and innovative ideas. And at 43, leaving behind his wonderful wife and children, who I got to know a little bit, especially at the National Review cruise that he was on, that I joined him on in 2010. Just a really wonderful, warm family guy who was just a juggernaut of energy and a happy warrior in the in the sense of fighting patriotically for the America that we all love. So I just think it's tragic.
Well, in addition to all of that, which I second fully, needless to say, he was a man who was a creator. You know, in a business in which there's an awful lot of followers, he was a real leader, and not just in the ways that, you know, brought him a certain amount of fame and, well, for that matter, notoriety. His taking on Acorn, most I guess famously, but also, you know, the creation of the bigs, as he used to call them, the big piece, big journalism, big government. He had a sense of what needed to be done, and a capacity, especially with, you know, a command of the information technology that most of us old fogies don't have a clue about, of actually transforming it into reality. And it was just an extraordinary privilege to help him create Big Peace, which we have been involved with from its inception. And his loss is just tremendously felt. Andy, we could spend the entire time talking about that. Let's move to something else that could conceivably be a tremendous tragedy, albeit of a very different kind. A man you prosecuted and put away for the rest of his life, we thought, responsible for killing Americans and seeking to kill a great many more of us, namely the blind sheikh, is now being discussed as a man who may be sprung at the behest of some of our enemies. What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, Frank, you should know. I guess folks should know that ever since we captured the blind sheikh in, I guess he was arrested in July of 1993, there's been agitation in various Islamic countries, but in particular in Egypt, for his return. And some of that agitation, as I mentioned in a column at National Review today, has crossed the line into barbarism, so that we had an atrocious attack by his terrorist organization against 58 tourists and some Egyptian policemen in Luxor, Egypt. His terrorist organization, the Blind Sheikhs, which is known as the Islamic Group, carried out a brutal massacre in 1997 in Luxor, Egypt, in which they brutally killed 58 tourists and some Egyptian policemen in an operation that was designed to extort his release. And it's far from the only one that they've carried out. In fact, as I mentioned also in the column I alluded to, the Osama bin Laden and Zawahiri, who is now the head of al-Qaeda, participated in an event only 3 weeks before they bombed the USS Cole, demanding the release of the blind sheikh. And at that event, they promised that there'd be a step up in violence against the United States, which of course there was if he wasn't released. His own son, Mohammed Abdul Rahman, called for the spilling of blood to avenge the sheikh, and bin Laden himself credited the blind sheikh with issuing the fatwa that approved the 9/11 atrocity. So we're talking about, you know, as bad, and I don't say this because I was personally involved in it, I just think it's a matter of objective fact, this is as bad a jihadist terrorist as the world has ever known, and certainly as the United States has ever known.
Yeah. And Andy, what's going on with respect to trying to get him released at the moment?
Well, I think the new Islamist government there, in conjunction with the military, which is, you know, obviously under some pressure as it transitions to an Islamist government, given that the Egyptians have now, by a margin of about 80%, installed a Muslim Brotherhood-dominated government in Egypt, they want to exploit the fact that they have these 16 American, as they're called, civil society activists who are in custody because they've taken funds, I guess, from overseas in violation of Egyptian law. So they kind of have the United States over a barrel, and they're trying to exploit that situation. And one of the ways they're trying to exploit it is to turn up the heat on our government to do what they've been demanding for, the Islamists, that is, have been demanding for years, which is to swap prisoners, the Americans they're holding for the blind sheikh and other Egyptians that we have in custody in the United States.
Do you see any prospect that the Obama administration would actually contemplate making such a trade?
Well, it's not a question of sort of making it up out of thin air, because there's already been a report in Al Arabiya, which is a pretty prominent Arabic newspaper, which says that the Obama administration has actually offered to turn over the blind sheikh among 49 other Egyptian prisoners in order to get our prisoners back. Now, I should emphasize here, Frank, that all we have is a report in the Arabic press, and that while Al Arabiya is not a fly-by-night operation, it's also not immune from the Arabic media's propensities toward conspiracy theories and sensationalism.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to hang my hat or try to hang the Obama administration on that. But to say that I'm not very concerned would be wrong. And I just point to their history of either releasing terrorists or talking about releasing terrorists, as in the negotiations they want to do with the Taliban.
Yes.
And as in connection, you'll remember, with the Iranian terrorists who killed our soldiers in Iraq a few years back.
Right.
Obama released a bunch of those terrorists in a swap for British prisoners.
Andy McCarthy is our guest, as he is each week, the former federal prosecutor who put the blind sheikh away, and, of course, a columnist for National Review Online, the author of Grand Jihad and Willful Blindness. Andy, in just the remaining couple of seconds we have, really, does the President of the United States have the authority to relinquish such a man, given the status he has as a convicted criminal felon?
He most certainly does. Every convicted felon in the federal system is committed to the custody of the Attorney General once his court proceeding is over. So prisoners are in the custody of the executive branch. The president has plenary authority over the conduct of foreign relations. So this is certainly something he could do. There may be some things that Congress can do to intervene, but basically the only check on this, Frank, is political pressure. There's not much else that could be done.
Well, we will look for your column, Andy McCarthy, as we do all of your writings, and I hope take it to heart. And as a call to arms, folks, we must not let this man loose to kill again. Andy, thank you, as always. God bless you, and God bless Andrew Breitbart as well. I hope to talk to you all tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Over and out.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.